Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I have a doubt through the door like a rocket. That's how it goes, you know, but it's nearly finished there.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a great old song.
I have a doubt through the door like a rocket.
Down the mountain I ran like a hare. I never stopped running for a fortnight. And I've never been since at a fair.
I never heard that before.
My old fella used to sing that.
It's
all
a right
thing.
One, isn't it?
That's a great song.
Yeah.
And especially like I was down in Bandon. And they said, oh, here's Joe Brown. Derry Man, you'll sing a song for us. See, so it's great. And if somebody says to me, It's like a man with Tourette's. If somebody says to me, "You'll sing a song," I don't say, "Oh, I just do it immediately." And then the fucking place goes, "Jesus, here he goes." I hope you're recording all. Hey, I hope that was being recorded.
It was.
Good. Good. When you're jamming with Christy Moore, come on, we can do it again, sure. I'll teach you it. We might do it again at some stage during this. If you ask me to sing a song, because that is true, I'm like a person with Tourette's in any situation.
Well, I have to say, you've got a good voice.
I sang at Seamus Henney's 60th birthday.
And you can hold the note on your fucking...
Well, you see, my mother's a very good singer.
Yeah.
I was the boy soprano in the cathedral in St. Pat's Armagh.
What age were you?
When the great Joris Min was the organist. Well, I mean, one of the great organists of Europe. I mean, you'd go in there, he'd be doing old Wagner, he'd be doing Stravinsky. And the great organ of the cathedral in Armagh.
What was your favourite boy soprano piece?
I can't really.
You can't remember?
Not really remember, no. Because you see, I was in St. Pascal Board. Yeah. So I would have been shipped over there, would have worked with Joris. Cardinal Fee was the cardinal.
Yeah, I happen to great know man. A little bit about your time in school.
Yeah. I'm not making any comment.
Get that I heard a few very interesting stories about your some of your scholastic exploits.
Mm. I reject that.
He'll sue you.
Yes, I just... do we have Christy's contact details from my legal team? I would never do that to you. Are you kidding me? The man's a national saint. He'd never be able to go out again.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Can we get started here? Keep all of this, right? Because we're there's nothing going to waste in this.
Okay.
All right, and we're happy with the sound in there. We're all good?
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Dion, take it away, brother.
Welcome to Free State, everybody. There's a lot of ways I could introduce the guest we have today, but all I'm going to do is say, Christy Moore, welcome to Free State.
Dion Fanning, it's great to see you.
Christy Moore.
It's great to see you. I've been talking to you for the last 5 years, and now I get to meet you in real life.
Well, you know, you put me under pressure with the, you know, what questions you don't want to be...
No drink, no drugs, no rock and roll.
Tearing up my questions.
That's right. When did you stop drinking? For fuck's sake.
Ah, for fuck's sake, it's all gone.
Yeah.
Christy, it's really wonderful to have you here. I've seen you, I think I was going through it there with Mick Devine, who's here now. I think I've seen you 10 times in the last, since lockdown ended, since you played those first gigs to a full crowd in the Pavilion in Dunleary. And
I've been starting to get a bit worried, actually. Every time I look onto the crowd, just I see you, what's that fella doing back here again? What's the story?
He's got no off switch.
Well, it's true. I think my addiction now is your gigs.
And eating bags of sweets. I've never... It's prodigious.
Well, there is a fellowship for that, you know.
For sweets?
No, for being addicted to ballads.
Is there, yeah? Did you ever try that one?
No, I'm sticking with it.
But I saw you. Myself and Joe went to see you in Vicar Street a couple of weeks ago, and I went again on Monday night, and you're playing 11 nights in Vicar Street at the moment, between November, December and January. And the extraordinary thing is, and it goes through all those gigs I've seen, everyone is different.
Well, you know, since 66 I've been doing this, and I've got a big repertoire of songs, and luckily there's a good few of them I'm still able to play. So I like to go out of a night and wherever the night takes me. I start off with the same couple of songs every night. I always start off with Chicago and Viva la Quinta Brigada, because it gets the audience singing. And if I get the audience singing, it really settles the whole thing down. As Joe will tell you, it's like getting a goal in the first minute. You know, it's a great old buzz when you get them going, and you can kind of take it anyway.
I prefer the goal in the last minute.
Well, you do that too.
Goal in the last minute. By then, the goals are so frequent, I'm not counting them.
But you said
it's the voice. I mean, I saw you, Christy, in the Rialto when I was a child. My mother and father, as you know, were Republican and folk singers. And I saw you in the Rialto. And I remember thinking, the sweat was lashing off you. And you were thunderous. The place was just, it was electrifying. And I remember thinking, even then, you know, we are not alone. You know, Christy Moore gets us. Yeah. You know, we're not alone. And then when I saw you, I hadn't seen you until we went to Vicar Street together. And I was... The voice is completely undimmed.
He comes once every 30 years, Dion.
Yeah. I said to Dion, like, genuinely, you know, Christy could sing the phone book and people would go crazy, because there's a quality that's so rare, I think, of authenticity and that sense of a human being who has always stood with the underdog in every cause. And I have to say, Dion will tell you, I got very emotional during the show, because there was something about you that just, it radiates something true and something courageous and honest.
I loved the Rialto in Derry. I remember I did a number of Bloody Sunday commemoration concerts there. And before one of them, I spoke to Eamon McCann, and I asked him, tell me your memories of Bloody Sunday. And he brought me around to a few other people, and I ended up with this. It happened on a Sunday afternoon, on a lovely, bright, crisp winter's afternoon, on a perfect day for walking. There was gunshots, stones and bullets on the lovely, bright, crisp winter's afternoon. And there was chaos, panic, death, disbelief upon the faces, fear and bewilderment, the seconds seemed so long. They're firing bullets at us. It was not supposed to be like this. And all those words came from members of the audience. I went out and I just spoke to people, and I wrote down little things they said, and that song came out of it. I remember that night so well.
And when people were afraid to, and particularly in the South, and once the repressive legislation came in, and when people in the South and the establishment were afraid to say anything supportive... Conor Cruise O'Brien, you know, I mean, a really ghastly human being. I hate to say it about anybody. But whenever that happened, and it almost, you know, it became, you know, almost an embarrassment to say something that supported us. I mean, you just, and no doubt, you know, you never considered the personal cost, the cost of your career, anything like that. And for us, Christy was always very, very, very special, you know. And, I mean, I can remember you during the hunger strikes and the, you know, you came to visit Pick McFarlane, as I recall, great Pick.
I also remember contacting your man, Da, when we were doing the H Block album, and we got that great song that they did. Can you sing a bit of that? And we're no convicts,
no uniform. No strangers here, these bolts and locks, no new design, these dark H Blocks. Yeah, what a song.
And they gave that song just so willingly, and it was one of the highlights of that
album. I think all the royalties for that song went to the Prisoner's Dependence.
That's right, yeah.
But I remember that album. But I remember you went to meet Bick, and it was all those people of integrity, yourself, Cardinal O'Faith and Cross McLean, who never took a backward step either.
Never did, no.
And to this day, you know, you've never taken a backward step. And
Des Wilson.
We're so Des Wilson, you know, these sorts of people, like, and you know, I've said this before many times, that, you know, what profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? And the greatest thing that'll be said about you is,
well, I've such great friends to this day, you know, I still have great friends when we visit and talk to, and we remember, you know, we haven't forgotten.
And you look great.
The what?
Bick sends his regards.
Oh, Bick, yeah.
What a man. Where? You know that Bick was studying for the priesthood.
I do.
Would you not interrupt when me and Christy are talking? you know that Bick was studying for the priesthood, and he didn't even come from a Republican family.
I knew that, yeah.
And then whenever they burnt out Bombay Street, the loyalist mob, assisted by the old Royal Ulster Constabulary, burned out an entire street, I think 85, 86.
Yeah.
Families were burnt out of their home. He came home. And it's an astonishing thing. And you'll have seen this through your relationships, such close relationships with people who, you know, got involved with the IRA and really very serious violence, that these people would never otherwise have become involved. You know, Bick would have gone on to be a priest.
Yeah.
I mean, he was very serious about it, very, very devout. You know, and you meet him now. I meet him now up in West Belfast and up at the Ardoyne Games or up at St. Paul's to watch a championship match. And he's like your fond sort of uncle.
Yeah.
You know, and if you said to something, as I said to my wife, the glamorous brunette, you know, I must introduce you to this fella. And then I introduced her to him and he was chatting away. And then I told her exactly who he was. And she was going, oh, Jesus Christ, oh my God, you're joking.
He still hears confessions.
We'll keep that between ourselves.
What was that like, though, being in the South during that time? Like, you know, when the H Block album was launched, the Special Branch raided the launch of that. Like, did you ever think of just, like, taking a step back?
Not really. I mean, the Special Branch raiding the launch of the H Block album gave it a really essential bit of publicity, because nobody would have known about it, you know, until that happened.
Yeah.
And I don't remember all very well sitting up there at the table with Pierce O'Doyle, and who else is at the table? People from the Relatives Action Committee, and in the branch came, and looking back on it now, it was just a memorable event, and so glad the way people came together for that album as well. Matt Malloy played on it, Stephen Ray read two Bobby Sands poems, the late Dan Dowd played pipes on it, Donal Lunny, Mick Hanley, everybody just came on board, and we made that album, and it's I'm very proud of that album.
And it's not like, it's not the only cause you've been loyal to, but where does that come from? Like, your parents were both active and political. I think you said your daddy would have been, you consider him a socialist.
Well, no. My dad was in Fine Gael.
Yeah.
But Maureen De Burka said to me recently, I met her, and she said she remembered in the 50s being at a collection for prisoners at the chapel gates, and she was getting harassed, and my father came over and stood beside her. And she always reckoned after that my father was a socialist who somehow ended up in Fine Gael.
Right. But they were both active. Like, your mother was very active around elections. I think somebody said that, you know, the sheets wouldn't get washed until the elections.
Until the elections, yeah. My mother was very involved in politics. When Daddy died, she took up a seat in the county council and the town commissioners. And after a while, she jumped ship from Fine Gael and went independent. And my sister Terry was in Sinn Féin and was a candidate for European elections, one of the early European elections for Sinn Féin. And so from early on, there was an awareness in the family of the different sides of the road. And both my father and my mother were always involved in helping anybody they could help.
And there was also always music as well.
Always music, yeah. Mammy was a very good singer. Sang in the church. I had a nice chat with your sister Jo last week. She told me she was a soprano, and my mother was also a soprano, and we talked about that for a while. The different voices of being a soprano and being a ballad singer, two completely different voices. And I think your sister has both of them. You know, she can sing the classics and she can sing the ballads. My mother was the same. You know, she sang in the church and Dominican church in Newbridge. And then she loved to sing song of the weekend. Yeah.
And that's where the love of the song came from as well.
Definitely, yeah. The first thing I can remember is learning Kevin Barry as a small boy. My mother had a devotion to Kevin Barry. And it was the first song I ever learnt was Kevin Barry. I used to sing it at little concerts around Newbridge.
Well, give us a wee.
The which?
Give us a wee twirl of it there.
In Mountjoy Jail, one Monday morning, high upon the gallows tree, Kevin Barry gave his young life for the cause of liberty. The last time I sang at Joe was in Barlands in Glasgow, about 6 or 7 years ago, and the whole audience sang it with me. It was just an amazing thing, you know. Great song.
Well, that happened in Vicar Street last week too when we were there.
Yeah.
On many occasions.
Yes.
People joined in. And there was magic in the air. I mean, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, you didn't even take a break. I mean, we couldn't even get a pint.
Yeah.
and then you did over 2 hours.
Yeah, well, you know, it just flows, Joe. It flows. I do one gig a week now. So when I hit the stage for those 2 hours, I mean, to me, I'm in a very special place. You know, I'm singing my songs to people who want to hear them, and it's the pure privilege of it, you know. And it brings out a different voice as well, a voice that I don't have here now or I don't have at home. When I hit the stage, there's this other voice comes out, the energy comes into it. And
it's like a Johnny Cash, you can sing in tune.
Yeah.
But the one of the best parts about it for me, because I did find it very emotional, as Dean will tell you, was how young the audience was and how appreciative they were. I mean, a very young audience.
Yeah. I'm getting a lot of first-timers now. People are coming along for the first time. And like the other night in Vicar Street, I'd say there was very few, even half my age there. Yeah. You know, it was... But I suppose it's just one of those things. It's a great gift.
Yeah, you're not like one of those performers, you know, who used to be big and now he has to go on cruises, and it's all the old age pensioners who used to enjoy him when he was young on the cruises. you have to have four intervals.
But when you talk about that, when you talk about your voice on the stage, like when we first met, it was at the start of
just before COVID.
Just before COVID. I remember we actually, you know, Joe brought us together.
Yeah. I heard you doing Joe on The Unfiltered.
Yeah.
And I think I rang you. I got your number and rang you just to say how much I'd enjoyed that, you know.
So he's not all bad.
Well, one of the good things about that, when you were talking to Joe, you did get a chance to speak.
Well, I was interviewing him, so I didn't have to be, you know, you didn't have to.
I mean, that was a great interview. And then some of the subsequent ones, I used to listen every week then. And then I've drifted into the Free State, which I also listen to every week. And it's brilliant what you're doing.
But what I was going to, we met then, I remember you still had a couple of gigs lined up. They hadn't been cancelled when we had a coffee that time. And then I think, you know, everything got cancelled. And we kept in touch during lockdown, but it only struck me really, like, stupidly, like, when, you know, when you said during that time, I saw you say it on your website when you were commenting to somebody, you said nobody ever died for the absence of a song, like, you know, and you were, you know, knew that this was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But you must have found it so tough just without, because, like, when you talk about what the audience gives you and what you get on the stage, the minute you got that back, it must have been a great thing to get back.
It's very hard to remember now, but like thinking back on it now, I was always very aware of the fact that I lead a very privileged life. I live in a fine house with a big garden near the sea. And any time I was feeling down or out, I started thinking about people who are living in the fourth or fifth story of a block with young kids and nowhere to go. And it never got to me that much, you know. It was odd and it was strange. And I started doing songs then on out on the, what do you call it?
On the internet.
In the streaming. Internet.
Facebook Live.
Streaming, Facebook. Yeah. I started doing these gigs with my son. My son Andy came in and we recorded these things on his smartphone. And they went all over the world. There was millions of people heard them, you know. And they got a great buzz out of that, you know. And I think that's fed into this new thing, new audience I have now. I think that might have kicked it off, you know.
Yeah. But it always was, like, when you talk about that sense of, like when Joe talks about your voice and those things, and the, like, you talk to me a little bit about, like, when you're, you know, there's a pain, I think, in your voice. There's a sense of loss in your voice that I think all the great, you talk about Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash had it, and it comes from some kind of, my view is it comes from some kind of trauma or tragedy.
Well, I tend to live the songs, Dion, you know. Yeah. And if I'm singing a song that has crack in it, I have crack. And if I'm singing a song that has emotion in it, I go there.
Yeah.
And some occasionally I can be singing a song and I can get quite emotional in the singing of it. I remember one night in London with Planxty in the Hammersmith Odeon singing Pity the Poor Emigrant, Bob Dylan's song. And halfway through the last verse, I got so emotional I couldn't continue. And fair play to Liam O'Flynn, he started playing the melody on the pipes and just carried it away. And sometimes that will still happen to me. I'll choke up in a song. And because some of the songs I do have great sadness in them and great emotion and anger, but also, Greg, there's good crack in there.
Yeah, there, you know? No, there is. But I think the truth, to convey that sadness, you have to understand something of sadness.
Yeah,
too,
well,
you
know, we've all had sadness in our lives, you know, and some of us are able to kind of carry on with it and some of us go under, you know. Yeah.
Another way of putting it, Dion, is, and it's like a great poet or a great singer or, you know, a great actor. There's something inside that's coming out. It's not, you're not looking around for the commercial opportunities or wondering what'll go well. I mean, I always marvelled at Phil Coulter's ability, his chameleon ability, to write about anything. I mean, Phil Coulter can write anything. You could say to Phil Coulter, look, I want you to write a really nice promo song for this carpet on the floor. And he would write a hit. Somebody would probably win the Eurovision with it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But with artists like you, it's I think the reason that emotion comes through is because it's real, just as you describe it. I mean, one of the funny things that the gig in Vicar Street was that when you forgot your words, you remember, the guy was heckling you and you forgot your words.
Oh, geez,
and the crowd just enjoyed it so much because you handled it so perfectly, you know. It was a fun song.
Well, for years and years, Joe, I used to get angry, you know, but I don't anymore. If anything goes wrong at a gig now, I try and make fun of it.
You know, you seem very serene now.
The other night, there was a young fella let a roar out in the middle of a song and it totally threw me. And I kind of said, well, fuck you anyway. But at the end of the song, I went over and I apologised to him and we had a great laugh about it, you know, because the poor guy was mortified. He was just excited and he let this inappropriate roar out at an inappropriate time. And I lost my
He's got Tourette's.
So you have to make fun of it, you know.
But when you played the night, I was at Vicar Street a couple of nights ago and you talk about the crack and you did the Ballad of Ruby Walsh that night. And you did so many songs, like, over the last couple of years that I haven't heard. You did Matty, which I love, which I hadn't heard you do.
Yeah.
But you did the Ballad of Ruby Walsh, and you were in the enjoyment you were getting from it. Like, I'd never seen you as actually kind of almost gigglish.
Well, something happened that night, you see, when I did this Ballad of Ruby Walsh, and the audience started to interject perfectly on the beat during the chorus. And I was thrilled with that, you know, because it's something that just had never happened before, you know. And also, I used to always play it as a guitar song, but now I've just stood up and started doing it, and there's much more crack in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's surprising because I've forgotten, you know, when you're on the stage and the spotlight's on you, you seem such a huge presence, like such a huge presence, you know, and you know, filling the auditorium. And then whenever you invited us up into the room
you
afterwards,
meet this little old fella.
How small you are. You know what I mean, though, because when he's out on the stage, you think this vast musical machine.
Well, Mick Devine has a bicycle pump and he fucking blows me up before.
And whenever you put your foot down, like whenever you want to go, whenever you want to really, you know, charge it up, the passion in your singing, I mean, you can feel, I'd say they could turn off the what I couldn't believe was how undimmed your voice is. And when you sang Only Our Rivers Run Free, which I know you've sung it throughout the years, and you know, when you were singing it almost in a whisper when you started singing it at the very start when the song came to you from Mickey McConnell. I know you, Mickey, what a man. Yeah. What a man, Mickey McConnell, you know.
Well, I learned it from Cahill, his brother.
Eccentric. I mean, they're all geniuses.
Yeah,
Cormac's absolutely. A genius as well. Yeah. Yeah. See, their mother was the headmistress in Belnalec School.
Yeah.
And she was very Republican. And my father would say the boys were all reared in the right way.
Yeah.
and she, like, Mickey told me a story one time that for the Queen's coronation in 1953.
I know the story.
What happened was all the schools in the north were sent.
Coronation
every
mugs.
Every child in the school got a coronation mug. It must have cost a fortune, you know. And Mrs. McConnell, the principal, she took the entire school out into the playground and she told them to bring the cups with them. And on her signal, all the cups were smashed in the centre. And then the children danced around in a circle, singing A Nation Once Again.
Isn't that brilliant? It really is.
And you know, Mickey is such an ingenious, delicate songwriter. And I was so pleased when you sang that because it's different now than when you started to sing it.
Oh, yeah.
And I wondered whether you might honour us with a bit of Only Our Rivers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I first heard it in the...
I cannot believe I'm asking Christy Moore to sing songs and he's singing them.
The Irish Centre in Leeds, I heard the song.
Okay.
Liam O'Flynn was playing. There was a Cultist Cultori tour of England where I was living at the time. And Liam played and Cathal McConnell played and Cathal sang this song. And I actually stopped singing it for about 20 years because when Moving Hearts came along, I was doing Irish Ways and Irish Laws, and that kind of replaced Only a Rivers Run Free. And then later on, I was doing No Time for Love and different kind of songs. And then I wrote a song with Bono, North and South of the River. But recently, I've started doing the When Apples Still Grow in November, when blossoms still bloom on each tree, when leaves are still green in December, it's then that our land will be free. I wander her hills and valleys, still through my sorrow I see a land that has never known freedom and only her rivers run free. And then Liam used to come in on the whistle there and Andy on the harmonica and great times. I drink to the death of her manhood. I'm going to park it there, Joe.
Whose manhood have died?
Go on.
I'm
not going to do a singing to you with Christy Moore. I'll die of sheer happiness. But what a great song, and you can hear a pin drop when you sing it. But it's, you know, it's that sense I think of people feeling this guy's one of us. That's well,
you know, when I sing it now, it's kind of nice because the younger generations haven't heard it, and the older, particularly when I play it up north, you know, the older people come in singing it, and I sense the young people hearing this song for the first time and wondering, Jesus, what's that, you know? So it's nice. The way it's rolling out, you know.
He's a special songwriter.
He is, yeah, I agree with you.
You got the politician's song that I sent you?
The
politician's song.
Oh, I love politicians.
That he wrote, you know that? Asked me to send it.
Yeah, I got that, thank you, yeah.
Honestly, it's made for you. I'm very glad you asked me that.
No, I don't think I could do it. I haven't listened to it.
Are the words too tricky? Too many words?
No, it wouldn't be.
Just doesn't fit you?
Yeah, it's just sometimes, you know, straight away. I love listening to it and I listen to it again.
Yeah.
But I couldn't sing it, you know.
You mentioned being in Leeds for that and you went to England, you know, going over to England in the 60s.
66, after the bank strike.
What do you think would have happened if the banks hadn't gone on strike?
Oh, definitely I would have become a bank manager. I'd probably be a director of the Bank of Ireland.
You would not.
I was a fucking disaster of a bank manager.
How bad?
I could never balance. I could never balance. I was always in trouble. Sent home to shave. Go home and change your shirt. You're late again, Mr. Moore. Oh, Jesus, I hate it.
Were you taking drink at the time?
I was.
Were you down in Clonmel, was it?
I was drinking large bottles then. I was very fond of...
What age would you have been?
I joined the bank at 18.
You're right.
I left at 21.
You leave of your own accord?
I did. I left after the strike. I came back and for 2 hours went in and signed on, because by coming in and signing on, I got the whatever was agreed by the Irish Bank Officials Association. I came back from England, went down to Ballyhaunis, signed on and left.
And you went to England?
I went to England. And
why Ballyhaunis?
That's where you went where you were sent.
So in Mayo?
Yeah, yeah. The last year of my banking career was in Ballyhaunis, County Mayo. And I stayed with Mrs. Nestor. Her husband was the barber in the town. And I stayed there and I went and played rugby in Galway for Galway Corinthians.
Jeez, I didn't know that to play
and
rugby.
Drank large bottles.
And you were singing, you'd be singing in the pubs and stuff, would you?
Well, singing in the pub a bit, but mainly singing in my digs.
Was that large bottles of whiskey?
No, large bottles of Guinness.
Oh, large bottles of Guinness.
I was never too fond of whiskey.
Yeah.
I like gin. I drank a lot of gin.
But you could drink 14 pints of stout and then surfboard.
I never did the surf for, but I certainly did the 14 pints.
You see, I know two boys, you know, they were down surfing in Rosnaula. And you know, I could never figure out how your man stayed up in the surfboard after 14 pints. So they decided to try it, so they had 14 pints of stout.
That Rosnaula is a nice place.
Aye, and there's loads of surfing there. And they couldn't stay up in the surfboard, and unfortunately they drowned.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm joking, they didn't try. But they couldn't stay, it's gone
in the wrong direction.
A new version of the song.
They couldn't stay. That's right. A tragic version of the song. You know, and this one now.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping.
Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
But so you genuinely think you would have stuck around, you would have, if the banks...
I couldn't wait to get out.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to get out of a job like that.
Well, it's unbelievably indoctrinating.
You're stuck in and you've no money. Mm. Like, I was getting £7 a week and like my digs were £4 a week.
Yeah.
And but you know what? I don't regret those 3 years because I got great insights into different parts. I spent a lot of time in Clonmel. I still have friends in Clonmel from that time. I was on a thing called the temporary duty staff for a year, where you went around to different branches filling in. And I went to all kind of exotic places.
Yeah.
So I loved it. And,
presumably during all that time you were playing and singing.
Yeah.
So you were singing, playing in pubs and stuff, but were you just doing it socially, casually?
Oh, yeah. Just ballad sessions, you know. I remember the bank manager in Clonmel, Mickey O'Connor, telling me, you know, a junior bank official shouldn't be going around the pub singing. Would you take up golf or play bridge? I said, would you ever fuck off enough, you know?
You just had a horrific image of Christy wearing the whole golf attire, you know, with the white shoes and the pink checked trousers.
Tell me, where did you work as a box jumper?
In Manchester.
That was in Manchester?
Yeah, it was a waste paper factory.
Right. Tell people what a box jumper is.
Well, basically, it was this four sides, timber sides, like, and the upstairs, the waste paper came in and was sorted and dropped down different chutes. And the box jumper would stand in the box, and as the paper came down, would jump it into the corners so as it would bale properly. It was a terrible, terrible job.
And that's what you were doing, a slick sort of the wine pressing that they used to...
A version of that, yeah.
And how many hours a day was that?
It was kind of 40, 50 hours a week. I didn't stick it too long, though.
Jesus.
And that was when you went, when you went to England that time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I worked on a few different... I was on the oil rigs for a while as well, and I did a few different jobs until I just said, I'm going to have a go at this now, and I started getting a few little gigs around Manchester. Yeah. A man called Mike Harding, a well-known English singer, gave me my first gig in the old house at home in Blakely. And then I started to get gigs around Manchester. And that was late 1966, early 1967. I was up and running.
And that was the beginning?
That was the beginning of it, yeah.
And the folk club scene then? Around.
The folk club scene in England was fantastic, and Scotland.
Yeah.
And I met all these other singers and...
Who, like, gives like Ralph McTell and all those sort of people?
Well, Ralph came a little bit later. The older ones, like Martin Carthy and Alex Campbell and people like that, Noel Murphy, Matt McGinn in Glasgow.
Ewan McCall.
You'd be playing on the same bill as them.
Yeah.
And learning your trade. And
exactly.
Using that.
And learning songs from them and learning chords. Yeah. And then I met Dominic Behan at a concert in Shepherd's Bush for a fundraiser for the Irish Civil Rights Movement. And he heard me singing and he invited me back to his house. And I stayed in his house and he said, I'm going to make an album with you.
Yeah.
And he did. In 1968, he organised...
Right. What was that album called?
Paddy on the Road.
That's right. Yeah.
And I recorded a number of Dominic songs. And he was very, very special man to meet. Very interesting. Unfortunately, we fell out. But he was a great help to me and a great influence on me, you know. Great, he was a great raconteur. I was, 23 when I met Dominic, himself and his wife Josephine. He'd sit up all night singing and telling stories and drinking. And I used to have two C90 Gazettes of Dominic just talking. And unfortunately, I lost them. He was very special.
And did you ever make up?
We didn't. I remember being in Grogan's a couple of years before he died. And I'm at the counter there drinking and he's in the counter there and we fucking ignored each other. And I really regret it, you know.
And do you think if you weren't drinking at that time, or if you were alive and you'd stopped drinking, you'd have made up?
I don't know. It's one of the sad episodes in my life that we didn't...
What year would that have been, Christy?
Sorry?
What year would that have been?
Maybe 2 years before he died. It could be 35 years ago. It could be. You know, it's
hard to think straight when you're drinking, you know, when you're...
Yeah, things happen. I don't have that many regrets, but I do have certain regrets, and that would be one of them, you know.
Yeah.
because they were very hospitable to me, Dominic and Josephine, and their two lads were going to school then, Stephen and Fintan.
Sing us a bit of one of Dominic's songs.
Oh, I've won a hero's name with McAlpine and Costain, with Fitzpatrick, Murphy, Ash and Wimpy's gang. I've been often on the road on me way to draw the dole when there's nothing left to do for Sir John Lang. I used to think that God made the mixer pickin' hard so that Paddy might know hell above the ground. I've seen gangers big and rough, gangers big and tough, singing tear it all out rough when you're building up and tearing England down.
Do you know what I'm amazed by? Like, you know, Joe mentioned that you forgot a few lines the night we were there, but how you've all the songs in your head?
Well, certain songs, I mean, I haven't sung that song there now for, I don't know if I've ever gigged it.
Right.
But I recorded it in 1968 and it just is locked in there for some reason, you know. Ronnie Drew made a very good job of it subsequently, and a few other people have recorded it. But that was the first recording of that song when I did that album with Dominic. He did another one, Avondale. Oh, have you been to Avondale or lingered in her lovely vale? And then another one, the black and tans from London came to shoot the people down. They thought the IRA were dead in dear old Belfast town. Those cruel English monsters, they were cruelly defeated. No surrender is the war cry of the Belfast Brigade. We did that one in 1968 as well. I sang in a few army camps back.
Is it any wonder Conor Cruise banned most of your songs?
We're going to come to the band songs in a bit, not just yet.
I must tell you, Christy, that I was in Burns in Strokestown a few weeks ago. And if you heard the podcast, you know that's where
I heard it. Yeah,
that's where they swear by sheep nuts for your virility. They don't use the Viagra at all. It's far too expensive. And so the last time I went in there a few weeks ago, they presented me with, because I'd talked about these amazing properties of sheep nuts, they presented me with a huge bag of sheep nuts, you know, to great laughter. And I told them, because you see a lot of the Tulsk boys come down and drink down there, I told them that you were coming in to us.
Oh dear.
And he says, oh Jesus, make sure you remind them of the night we threw his whole crew into the River Tulsk. I said, oh Jesus. And in fact.
Well, that's not quite the way it ended up.
You have a song, and I looked it up then after that, and it's one of the lines in it is, you're talking about all the venues you sang in over the years, and one of the lines in it is, and Tulsk was just like being in hell.
That was a rough night.
Go on, tell us the story.
It was a rough night. It was a rough night with unfortunate consequences, but you know, it's a long time ago and there's a lot of water under the bridge.
They remember it with great affection. Cheered when I said when I said you were coming into the podcast. They cheered.
It all started when a couple of local lads refused to pay on the way in and my road crew stood their ground and it kicked off. Yeah. And I was hiding away and I kept well out of it. But the thing about it is...
The Sunday papers then, once the word got out, you see that there'd been a whole bully batter at it. The media all came up, but nobody would say anything except Mrs. Moylan, who was the postmistress, and she said it was absolutely fabulous. She said they were throwing boys into the river and everything, so the Sunday World got the whole scoop.
But what I remember mostly about it, it all happened before the gig. But then I went on and I started the gig and halfway through it kicked off again.
Chairs flying and boys being fired. But one of the Tulsk boys said to me, he sent me a text this evening. He says, tell Christy, don't forget your shovel if you want to go to Tulsk.
I drive through Tulsk very often now, you know, and every time I look, that venue, it's gone now, it's closed down.
The Tulsk is closed. They had a revival briefly before COVID, but
Well, if they ever open it up again, you know. If they ever open it up again, yourself and myself will go up and do a gig would there.
You? Oh my God! Yeah. There's a fella in Tulsa, Sean Moylan, who idolises you.
Okay.
And in fact, after that,
Sean Moylan.
Aye.
Whoa.
After that night, after that infamous night, he some years later took over the Tulsa Inn.
Oh.
And he rang up, and you had new management. And he said, you know, just Mr. Moore, we would love to have him in the Tulskin. We would love to have success. And the guy said, oh, yes, he said, look, when, you know, we could pencil him in the following week. Let me run it by Mr. Moore. And he says, he rang him back the following week and he says, Mr. Moore says, under no circumstances.
Well, I can guarantee you that never happened. But anyway, we won't get in the way of a good story.
What do you do?
Especially the way you tell it, Joe.
We'll get Joe singing at some point now. Again, we got him beforehand.
Oh, actually, there's absolutely no trouble there.
Joe, I heard you singing there beforehand. That song of your father's, that's...
No, it's not my father's song.
No,
it's
but you heard...
The fella from the town.
He used to sing outside. It.
Oh, he sang that. And the Mountainy Farmer and songs like that.
Give us a bit of it.
When... I'm like somebody with Tourette's. If somebody asks me to sing, no matter where it is, and I just immediately launch into it.
Well, go
you know
on
what I'm saying? When I was a smashing young fellow, my age it was just 17. I hired myself to a farmer at the horse fair in Ballinascreen. His farm was away up in the mountain. It was there amongst heather and bog, and the stock that I had to look after was a donkey, a goat, and a dog. The master turned out an old skinflint. His heart was as hard as a stone. He wrought me from daylight to darkness. In a month I was just skin and bone. The master and me and his mother, we lived in this tumble-down shack. The old woman was well over 90, and her bones were beginning to crack. She sat on a chair by the fire. She never would go to her bed. And when I got up every morning, she was sitting there nodding her head. We had three owl hens and a rooster. One day they all died of the croup. He plucked them and boiled them and salted them, and we lived for a week on the soup. Misfortune may never come single. Next day the owl nanny goat died. He skinned her and boiled her and salted her, and he made himself shoes from her hide. I thought that his mind was afflicted. I thought that his mind was insane. Poor Fido, he died of distemper. I was sent for the salt once again. When I saw what had happened, poor Fido, I couldn't sleep a wink all that night. And when I awoke the next morning, I got the most terrible fright. The old woman was lying by the fire. As I raced for the door, he cried halt, roaring, "Where are you going so early? Get back here and fetch me the salt." I went out through the door like a rocket. Down the mountain I ran like a hare. I didn't stop running for a fortnight, and I've never been since at a fair.
I'll have to hand it to you. That's a great a great song. Well sung.
I would have died happy. I sang for Christy Murray.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.